Woe unto you who would threaten the chosen vessel of the Most High God! Carpathia threw the water bottle onto the floor of the stage, and clear, clean water splashed everywhere. Buck knew the witnesses had turned only Nikolai's water to blood, and that they had likely caused him to need the drink in the first place. Nikolai pointed at Eli and Moisha and screamed, "Your time is nigh! I swear I will kill you or have you killed before..." But the witnesses were louder, and Carpathia had to fall silent. "Woe," they said again. "Woe to the impostor who would dare threaten the chosen ones before the due time. Sealed followers of the Messiah, drink deeply and be refreshed." The bottle in Buck's pocket suddenly felt cold. He pulled it out and felt the sting of frigidity in his palm. He twisted off the top and drank deeply. Icy, smooth, rich, thirst-quenching nectar cascaded down his throat. He moaned, not wanting to pull the bottle from his lips, but needing to catch his breath. All around, he heard the sighs of satisfied believers sharing cold, refreshing bottles. "Taste this, Yakov," Buck said, wiping off the top and handing it to him. "It's very cold." Yakov reached for the water. "It doesn't feel cold to me," he said. "How can you say that? Feel my hand." Buck put his hand on Yakov's arm, and Yakov flinched. "Your hand is freezing," he said, "but the bottle feels warm to me." He held it up to the light. "Ah, blood!" And he dropped it. The bottle bounced at Buck's feet, and he snatched it up before it emptied. It was again cold in his hands, and he couldn't resist guzzling from it. "Don't," Yakov said. But as he watched Buck enjoy the clean water, he fell to his hands and knees. "Oh, God, I am no better than Carpathia. I want to be a child of God. I want to be a sealed one." Buck squatted next to him and put an arm around his shoulder. "God wants you as part of his family," he said. Yakov wept bitterly, then looked up at the whir of chopper blades. He and Buck stared at the TV monitor where Zion stood alone again on the stage. His hair and clothes flapped in the wind from the helicopter, and his notes were whipped into a funnel before scattering. Translators leapt onto the stage to retrieve them and set them back on the lectern. Zion remained motionless, staring, having ignored the entire episode with Nikolai and the two witnesses. The camera panned to where the witnesses had appeared, but they had left as quickly as they had come. The crowd stood, mouths open, many still drinking and passing around water bottles. When they noticed Zion back at the lectern, they quieted and sat, as if nothing had happened since he began quoting John chapter 3, verse 16. Zion continued, "Begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." Yakov, still on his knees, hands on his thighs, seemed glued to the TV image. "What?" he cried out. "What?" And as if he had heard Yakov, Zion repeated the verse. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." Yakov lowered his face to the pavement, sobbing.
I believe, God, save me, don't let me perish. Give me everlasting life."
"He hears you," Buck said. "He will not turn away a true seeker." But Yakov continued to wail. Others in the crowd had fallen to their knees. Zion said, "There may be some here, inside or outside, who want to receive Christ. I urge you to pray after me. Dear God, I know I am a sinner. Forgive me and pardon me for waiting so long. I receive your love and salvation and ask you to live your life through me. I accept you as my Savior and resolve to live for you until you come again." Yakov repeated the prayer through tears, then rose to embrace Buck. He squeezed him so tight Buck could hardly breathe. Buck pulled away and thrust the water bottle into Yakov's hand again.
"Cold!"
Yakov exulted. "Drink," Buck said. Yakov held the bottle to the light again, smiling. It was clear.
"And it's full!"
Buck stared. It was. Yakov put it to his lips and tilted his head back so far that he staggered, and Buck had to hold him up. He gulped, but not fast enough, and the cool, clear water gushed over his face and down his neck. Yakov laughed and cried and shouted,
"Praise God! Praise God! Praise God!"
"Let me look at you," Buck said, laughing.
"Do I look different?"
"You'd better." He took Yakov's head in his hands and turned him toward the light.
"You have the mark," he said, "on your forehead."
Yakov pulled away and ran back toward the van.
"I want to see it in the mirror."
"You won't," Buck said, following him. "For some reason we can't see our own, but you should be able to see mine." Yakov turned and stopped Buck, leaning close and squinting.
"I do! A cross! And I have one, really?"
"Really.
Oh, praise God!"
They climbed back into the van and Buck dialed Chloe's phone.
"This had better be you, Buck," she said.
"It is.
I was worried about you.
Sorry, but we have a new brother."
"Yakov?
Want to talk to him?"
"Of course. And don't try to get back in, hon. It's a madhouse. I'll get Zion out as soon as I can."
Buck handed the phone to Yakov.
"Thank you, Mrs. Williams," he said. "I feel brand new. I am brand new. Hurry, and we can see each other's marks."
At the safe house, it was mid-afternoon. Rayford sat staring at the screen and shaking his head.
"Do you believe this?" he said over and over.
"I can't believe Nikolai lost it like that."
Ken stood blocking the sun from the window.
"I heard all the stories about them two witnesses, but man, oh man, they are spooky. I'm glad they're on our side. They are, aren't they?"
Dr. Charles laughed.
"You know as well as I do that they are. If you've been following Zion as closely on the net as you say you have..."
"This thing's gonna have the biggest TV audience in history tomorrow," Rayford said, turning to see what Hattie thought of it. She, too, stared at the screen, but her face was deathly pale, and she appeared to try to speak. Her mouth was open, her lips quivering. She looked terrified.
"You all right, Hattie?" he said.
Floyd turned as Hattie emitted a piercing scream. She flopped onto her back, cradled her abdomen with both hands, and rolled to her side, gasping and groaning. Dr. Charles grabbed his stethoscope and asked Rayford and Ken to hold Hattie down. She fought them, but seemed to know enough to try to stay quiet so Floyd could listen for the baby's heartbeat. He looked grave.
"What did you feel?" he asked. "No movement for a long time," she said, gasping. "Then sharp pain. Did it die? Did I lose my baby?"
"Let me listen again," he said. Hattie held still.
"I can't tell with just a stethoscope," he said, "and I don't have a fetal monitor."
"You could tell if it was there," Hattie said.
"But I can't be sure if I hear nothing."
"Oh, no. Please, no."
Floyd shushed her and listened carefully again. He felt all around her abdomen and then lay his ear flat on her belly. He straightened up quickly.
"Did you tighten your abdominal muscles on purpose?"
She shook her head.
"Did you just feel a labor pain?"
"How would I know?"
"Cramping? Tightening?"
She nodded.
"Phone!"
Floyd barked, and Ken tossed him his. The doctor dialed quickly.
"Jimmy, it's me. I need a sterile environment and a fetal monitor. Don't ask."
"No, I can't tell you that. Assume I'm within 50 to 60 miles of you. No, I can't come there."
How about Young Memorial in Palatine? Ken whispered. There's a believer there.
Rayford looked up, surprised. Floyd covered the phone. How close?
Not that far.
Thanks, Jimmy. Sorry to bother you. We found a place. I owe you one.
The doctor began barking orders.
Decide who's gonna drive, and the other get me 2 blankets.
Rayford looked at Ken, who shrugged.
I'm easy, he said. I can drive, or... Sometime today, gentlemen.
You know where it is. You drive, Rayford said, and he dashed upstairs. When he returned with the blankets, the rover idled near the door, and Dr. Charles backed out of the house with Hattie in his arms. She squirmed and cried and screamed.
Should you move her?
No choice, Floyd said. I'm afraid she's about to spontaneously abort.
No, Hattie screeched. I'm only staying alive for my baby.
Don't say that, Rayford said as he squeezed past and opened the car door.
Yes, say that, the doctor said. Whatever it takes, keep fighting. Ray, get 1 blanket on the back seat and put the other over her as soon as I get her in there.
He wrestled Hattie into the car, her head near the far rear door. When Rayford draped the other blanket over her, Floyd got in and lay her feet across his lap. Rayford jumped into the front seat, and Floyd said,
Don't hold back, Ken. Get us there as fast as you can.
Apparently, that was all Ken needed to hear. He gunned the engine and backed out the way he had pulled in. He slid to a dusty stop, then spun over the ruts in the torn-up road in front of the house. They bumped and banged and nearly rolled a couple of times as he set a course for Palatine.
Am I bouncing too much? He asked. You're not going to do either of them any more harm. Speed is more important than comfort now, Floyd said. Ray, help me.
Rayford twisted in his seat and grabbed Hattie's wrist as the doctor wrapped both arms around her ankles. They steadied her as Ken pushed the car to its limits. Only 1 short stretch of paved road existed between the house and the hospital. Ken opened the rover all the way over that quarter mile, and when he hit dirt at the end of it, the vehicle nearly went airborne. When the hospital came into view, Floyd said,
Find emergency.
Can't do that, Ken said. I don't know the woman's name. I just saw her mark, and she works up front near reception, not in emergency. I say we pull up there and let me run in and find her. If she can get us an operating room, the fastest way would be to take Hattie right through the front door.
Floyd nodded, and Ken steered up onto the sidewalk near the entrance.
Go, Ken. Ray, help me with her.
Rayford jumped out and opened the door near Hattie's head. She was unconscious.
I don't like this, the doctor said.
Let me take her, Rayford said. Just push her toward me, and then you lead the way in and talk to the woman if Ken's found her.
I've got her, Ray.
Just do it.
You're right, Floyd said, and he pushed as Rayford pulled and gathered Hattie to him.
She felt as light as a little girl despite her pregnancy. He wrestled with the blanket and charged up the steps behind Floyd. The woman with the mark of the cross on her forehead followed Ken toward the door, terror on her face.
You brothers are going to get me in trouble, she said. What have we got here?
She's about to miscarry, Floyd said. Are you certified in the OR?
Years ago. I've been behind a desk since...
I can't trust anyone else. Lead us to an OR now.
But...
Now, dear.
The receptionist, a teenager, stared at them. The woman said,
Point those eyes elsewhere and keep your mouth shut. Got it?
Didn't see a thing, the girl said.
What's your name, ma'am? Floyd said as they followed her down a corridor.
Leah.
I recognize your risk, Leah. We appreciate it.
Leah peered at Hattie as she opened the operating room door and pointed at the table.
I'm not her sister, apparently.
Floyd stared at her.
So we let her die, is that it?
I didn't mean that, doctor. You are a doctor.
He nodded.
I just meant you're going to a lot of trouble and danger for someone who isn't, you know...
One of us,
he said, rushing to the scrubbing area. He grabbed a gown from a stack and headed to the sink.
Scrub with me. You're going to assist.
Doctor, I...
Let's go, Leah. Now.
She stepped beside him at the sink. Ken stood near the still unconscious Hattie.
Rayford felt useless, waiting between the table and the scrub room. "Are we messing up the sterile environment in here?" he asked.
"Try not to touch anything," Floyd said. "We're breaking a lot of rules."
"I wasn't implying," Leah began.
"Faster," Floyd said, scrubbing more quickly than Rayford imagined it could be done. "We want to give this girl every chance to become one of us before she dies."
"Of course, I'm sorry."
"Let's concentrate on the patient. As soon as you're ready, I want you to paint her with betadine from sternum to thighs, and I mean paint. Use a liter if you have to. You don't have time to be precise, so just don't miss a thing. And have a fetal monitor on her by the time I get in there. If that baby is alive, I may try to take it C-section. You'll have to handle anesthesia."
"I have no experience."
"I'll walk you through it, Leah. How about we rise to the occasion?"
"I'm gonna lose my job."
"Huh," the doctor said. "I hope that's the worst thing that happens to you. You see the people in this room? I lost mine the other day. So did Captain Steele. Ken lost his home."
"I know him. He was a patient here."
"Really?"
He followed her into the operating theater.
"And how about the patient?" she asked, quickly applying the fetal monitor.
"Hattie, too. We're all in the same boat. Prepper."
Ken and Rayford moved closer to the door. Floyd checked the fetal monitor and shook his head. He hooked her to other various monitors.
"Actually, her respiration isn't bad," he said. "BP's low, pulse high. Go figure."
"That's weird, Doctor."
"She's been poisoned."
"With what?"
"I wish I knew."
"Doctor, did you call her Hattie?"
He nodded.
"She's not who I think she is she?"
"I'm afraid so," he said, moving into position. "You ever hear of another Hattie?"
"Not in this century." "Does her, boyfriend know what's going on, or should we plan a trip to a gulag somewhere when he finds out?"
"He did this to her, Leah.
When you got the mark, you became his archenemy, so now you're on the front lines, that's all." "That's all?" Rayford watched, praying for Hattie as Floyd positioned the glaring overhead light.
"Dilated, 7 or 8 centimeters.
"No section, then," Leah said.
"The baby's gone," he said. "I need an IV line, Ringer's lactate solution, 40 units of oxytocin per liter."
"Incomplete abortion?"
"See how fast it all comes back to you, Leah? Normally she would deliver in an hour or two. But as far along as she is, this will be quick."
Rayford was impressed with Leah's speed and efficiency. Hattie came too.
"I'm dying," she wailed.
"You're miscarrying, Hattie," Dr. Charles said. "I'm sorry. Work with me. We're worried about you now."
"It hurts."
"Soon you won't feel a thing, but you're going to have to push when I tell you."
Within minutes, Hattie was racked with powerful contractions. What, Rayford wondered, might the offspring of the Antichrist look like? The dead baby was so underdeveloped and small that it slipped quickly from Hattie's body. Floyd wrapped it and pieces of the placenta, then handed the bundle to Leah.
"Pathology?"
she asked. Floyd stared at her.
"No," he whispered firmly. "Do you have an incinerator?"
"Now I cannot do that. No, I have to put my foot down."
"What?"
Hattie called out.
"What? Did I have it?"
Leah stood with the tiny bundle in her hands. Floyd moved to the head of the operating table.
"Hattie, you expelled a very premature, very deformed fetus."
"Don't call it that. Boy or girl?"
"Indeterminate."
"Can I see it?"
"Hattie, I'm sorry. It doesn't look like a baby. I don't advise it."
"But I want..."
Floyd pulled off his gloves and laid a hand gently on her cheek.
"I have grown very fond of you, Hattie. You know that, don't you?"
She nodded, tears rolling.
"I'm begging you to trust me as one who cares for you."
She looked at him wonderingly.
"Please," he said. "I believe, as you do, that this was conceived as a living soul, but it was not viable and did not survive. It has not grown normally. Will you trust me to dispose of it?"
Hattie bit her lip and nodded. Floyd looked to Leah, who still appeared resolute. He placed the baby in a carrier and carefully examined Hattie. He beckoned Leah with a nod.
I need you to assist me with a uterine curettage to eliminate the rest of the placental tissue and any necrotic decidua. Worried about endometritis?
Very good. Rayford could see by the look on her face and the set of her jaw that Leah was not going to dispose of the fetus. Apparently Floyd gathered that too. After performing the procedure on Hattie, he gently picked up the wrapped body.
Where? He said.
End of the hall, she whispered. Two floors down.
He walked out, and Hattie sobbed aloud. Rayford approached and asked if he could pray for her.
Please, she managed. Rayford, I want to die.
No, you don't.
I have no reason to live.
You do, Hattie. We love you.
Chapter 5. Buck grew nervous in the van, waiting for Chloe and Zion. He assumed she would hustle Zion from the stage. Thousands would have given anything for a moment with him, not to mention committee members who might want a word. And no one knew how Carpathia might respond to what had happened on stage. He initially blamed it on Zion, but then the witnesses had appeared. Buck thought Nikolai should realize that Zion had no miraculous powers. Nikolai's quarrel was with the two witnesses. It was his own fault, of course. He hadn't been invited or even welcomed on stage, and the gall to have Fortunato and the pompous Peter II precede him. Buck shook his head. What else could one expect from Antichrist? Buck dialed Chloe's number but got no answer. A busy signal he could understand, but no answer? A recorded voice spoke in Hebrew.
Yakov, listen to this. What is she saying?
Yakov was still beaming, having craned his neck and leaned out the window to see others' marks. He often pointed to his own and learned that fellow believers always smiled and seemed to enjoy pointing heavenward. The day would come, Buck knew, when the sign of the cross on the forehead would have to say everything between tribulation saints. Even pointing up would draw the attention of enemy forces. The problem was the day would also come when the other side would have its own mark, and it would be visible to all. In fact, according to the Bible, those who didn't bear this mark of the beast wouldn't be able to buy or sell. The great network of saints would then have to develop its own underground market to stay alive. Yakov put the phone to his ear, then handed it back to Buck. If you want to leave a message, press 1. Buck did. Chloe, he said, call me as soon as you get this. The crowd out here hasn't thinned a bit, so I don't want to have to come and find you and Zion. But I will if I don't hear from you in 10 minutes. As soon as he ended the call, his phone chirped. Thank God, he said and flipped it open. Yeah, babe. Heavy static and mechanical noise. Then he heard, Jerusalem Tower, this is GC Chopper 1.
Hello?
Roger, Tower, do you read?
Hello, this isn't the tower, Buck said. Am I getting a cross frequency?
Roger, Tower, this is a confidential transmission, so I'm using the phone rather than the radio, Roger?
Mac, is that you?
Roger, Tower.
You in the chopper with the other three?
10-4. Checking coordinates to return to pad at King David. Over.
You trying to tell me something?
Affirmative. Thank you. No headwinds?
Is it about Zion?
Partly cloudy.
And Chloe?
10-4.
Are they in danger, Mac?
Affirmative.
Have they been taken?
Not at this time, Tower. ETA 5 minutes.
They're on the run?
Affirmative.
What can I do?
We'll come in from the northwest, Tower.
Are they outside the stadium?
Negative.
I'll find them in the northwest corner?
Affirmative. That's a go. Assistance, Tower.
Appreciate your assistance. Am I in danger, too?
10-4.
I should send someone else?
Affirmative and thank you, Tower. Heading that way immediately.
Mac, I'm going to send someone they may not recognize, and I'm going to be waiting for him to bring them out the northwest exit. Am I all right with that?
As soon as we can, Tower. Over and out.
Yakov, run in and find Zion and Chloe and get them out of the stadium through the northwest exit.
Yakov reached for the door handle.
Up or down, he said.
There's an exit at ground level and one below.
Bring them out from below and stop for no one. Do you have a weapon?
Yakov reached under the seat and pulled out an Uzi. He stuffed it in his waistband and covered it with his shirt. Buck considered it obvious, but in the darkness and with the press of the crowd, maybe it would go undetected.
Someone must have assigned GC guards to grab Zion. They don't have him yet, but it won't be long. Get them out of there.
Yakov ran into the stadium and Buck slid behind the wheel. The crowd was finally slowly starting to move. It was as if people didn't want to leave. Clearly, they hoped for a glimpse of Zion.
Buck didn't understand their conversations, but the occasional English phrase told him most were discussing the humiliation of Carpathia.
As Buck maneuvered the van carefully through the crowd, he heard a chopper. He feared it brought more GC guards. He was surprised that the helicopter looked just like the one that had borne Carpathia. He grabbed his phone and hit the last caller callback button.
McCollum! Mac, it's Buck. What are you doing back here?
10-4, security.
We'll check out the southeast quadrant.
I sent a man to the northwest corner.
Affirmative, affirmative. I'll check southeast, but then I'm taking my cargo to base. Over.
Might they be southeast now?
Negative. I'll cover southeast.
But what can you do if they're there?
Roger, I can create the diversion security, but then we're gone. Copy?
I'm confused but trusting you, Mac.
Just keep your people out of southeast security. I'll handle.
Buck tossed the phone onto the seat and tilted his outside mirror to watch the chopper. Leon Fortunato announced over the helicopter's loudspeakers, "We have been asked by Global Community Ground Security Forces at the stadium to help clear this area. Please translate this message to others if at all possible. We appreciate your cooperation."
The mass of people did not obey. As word spread that Carpathia's own helicopter hovered over one corner of the stadium trying to clear the area, hundreds started that way, staring into the sky. That cleared a path for Buck, who drove quickly to the northwest corner. As people streamed out, they were drawn to the helicopter and immediately began moving that way to check out the commotion. Buck pulled near the stadium. He ignored waving armed guards, opened his door, and stepped up on the floorboard to locate the underground exit. He found the dimly lit ramp where trucks had delivered equipment the day before. On tiptoes, he saw a shaft of light appear as a door burst open and someone sprinted up the ramp. Guards moved in for a closer look as Buck realized it was Yakov. What was he running from? Why was he ignored? Was the GC watching for Zion? As Yakov passed the guards, he appeared to spot the van. Less than 50 feet away, he looked straight at Buck. He pulled the Uzi from under his shirt and sprayed bullets into the sky as he turned left. The guards gave chase, guns drawn, and hundreds in the area screamed and dived for cover. Buck instinctively lowered his body, now watching over the top of the van. A couple hundred feet away, Yakov turned and fired more bullets into the air. The guards returned fire, and Yakov ran off again. Buck hadn't heard the van doors open, but he heard them shut and Chloe and Zion scream, "Go, Buck! Drive! Go now!" He dropped into the seat and slammed the door.
"What about Yakov?"
"Go, Buck!" Chloe hollered. "He's creating a diversion."
Buck laughed as he floored the accelerator and bounced over a curb.
"So is Mac," he said. "What a team! Where do we pick up Yakov?"
Zion lay on the floor of the back seat, panting. Chloe lay across the seat itself.
"He said he would meet us at Chaim's," Zion managed. "They were shooting at him. He said he wouldn't draw their fire until he was out of range. He was sure he'd be all right."
"Nothing is out of their range," Buck said, putting distance between them and the stadium.
Most traffic, emergency and otherwise, headed toward instead of away from Colic Stadium now. Roadblocks kept many civilian cars at bay as GC vehicles tried to get through. Buck was virtually ignored going the other direction.
If they're after you, Zion, we don't dare go back to Chaim's.
I cannot think of a safer place, Zion said. Carpathia will not threaten me there. Your wife was brilliant. She figured it out before it happened. She saw the guards coming for me, but she didn't like their looks.
They were pressing their earpieces hard against their ears, Chloe said, while releasing the safety locks on their weapons. I figured Carpathia or Fortunato told them to get revenge on Zion and do it in the middle of a crowd so it would look like an accident. They got so close that I heard one tell the Supreme Commander where we were.
I'm still worried about Yakov, Buck said.
He was resourceful, Chloe said. He jogged through the tunnel near us, saying, I'm looking for familiar faces to follow me quickly to safety.
We stepped out from a utility room and...
I immediately saw the mark on his forehead, Zion said.
Praise the Lord. You must tell us later what happened.
Chloe continued. He said you were bringing the van to the underground exit. He peeked out and saw the guards at the top of the ramp, then said he would create a diversion and we should follow 20 seconds later. He backed up and ran, bursting through that door.
It worked, Buck said, because he even distracted me. I didn't see you get in the van.
Nobody saw us, Chloe said.
Oh! What?
Nothing, she said, hissing. What, Chloe? Are you all right?
Just not used to running, she said.
Nor am I, Zion said. And I would like to get off this floor as soon as it is safe, too.
You cannot keep her here, Leah told Dr. Charles. It's impossible. I'm sorry. We could try to sneak her into a room, and I know it would be better for her. But if you think you'll ever need this facility or my help again, you'd better get her out of here now.
Give me another sedative, then, Floyd said. I want her out before we go.
Hattie slept all the way to the safe house, and Dr. Charles put her to bed near the TV, where they were quickly brought up to date on the activity in Jerusalem. His Excellency the Potentate, Nikolai Carpathia, will address the world in 20 minutes, the announcer said. As most of you saw on live television in the Eastern Hemisphere, and many saw on an internet hookup that covered the rest of the globe, an attempt to poison His Excellency was foiled. The potentate is healthy, though shaken, and wishes to assure global citizens he is all right. We expect his remarks may also cover what sort of retribution he might exact from the perpetrators of the attempt on his life.
The journalist in Buck wished he was still at the stadium. He would have loved to have seen how long Mac kept Carpathia, Fortunato, and the clownish Matthews in the air while giving Zion a chance to escape. He wished he could see for himself the water and blood on the stage and ask eyewitnesses if anyone saw the two from the wailing wall come or go. He had learned not to baby Chloe. She was as brave and strong as he was. But she was also carrying their child, and she had been through a horrible physical ordeal that had left her wounded. This trauma couldn't have been good for her. Buck was relieved to see Israeli rather than GC guards at Chaim's gates. Admittedly, it was this same force that had been behind the massacre of Zion's family and the chasing of him from his homeland, but now he was here as Chaim's guest, and Chaim was just short of deity in Israel. As soon as they were inside, a pale, trembling Chaim greeted them with embraces and demanded to know where Yakov was. Buck left the explaining to Zion, knowing Chaim would need assurances that his protege had not planned the disgracing of Carpathia.
"You assured me you would remain neutral," Chaim said. "Otherwise I would not have urged him to attend."
You knew he was coming and did not tell me, Zion said.
He wanted an element of surprise. Surely you must have expected him.
I had hoped he would wait until tomorrow or the next night. You should have prepared me.
You appeared more than prepared.
Zion sat wearily.
Chaim, the man interrupted the quoting of scripture. It was as if he had planned his entrance for the worst possible instant.
I am going to hold you to your promise to hear me out, and very soon. I am not up to it this evening, but as a brilliant and reasonable man, you will not be able to refute the evidence I have for Jesus as Messiah and Carpathia himself as Antichrist.
Rosenzweig settled into a large, soft chair and sighed heavily.
Zion, you are as a son to me. But what you just said could get you killed.
How well I know.
Of course, and I am still grieved and heartbroken over your losses. But to come to Israel to proclaim the deity of Jesus is as foolhardy as those troublemakers at the wall playing tricks with our water and our weather. And Zion calling Nikolai the Antichrist when he is visiting the holy city is the height of arrogance and insensitivity. I have told you before I would sooner believe Carpathia was the Messiah and one of those two so-called witnesses the Antichrist.
Zion sat shaking his head wearily, and Buck took the occasion to beg off for the evening.
If you'll excuse us.
Of course, Chaim said.
I would like to know when Yakov arrives, no matter when, Buck said.
Thank you for your concern, the older man said. We will get word to you.
Rayford kept one eye on the television while trying to reach someone in Israel. Neither Buck's nor Chloe's phone was answered, and he couldn't raise Mac either. Forgetting himself for a moment, he swore under his breath. Hattie roused.
That's the Rayford Steele I once knew, she said, her voice airy and weak.
Ah, I'm sorry, Hattie. That's not like me. I'm worried about what's happened over there, and I want to be sure everybody's all right.
It's nice to know you're still human, she whispered. But you never were, and you never will be as human as I am.
What does that mean?
I'm going to kill Nikolai.
I'm sorry about your baby, Hattie, but you don't know what you're saying.
Rayford, would you lean closer?
I'm sorry.
Don't be afraid of me. I'm not going to be around much longer anyway.
Don't say that.
I just don't have the energy to talk louder, so would you lean closer?
Rayford felt conspicuous, though it was only the two of them in the room. He pursed his lips, looked around, and turned his ear to her.
Go ahead, he said. Rayford, I was not with that man long enough for him to have affected me this much. I know I was no better or worse than the next girl. You knew that as well as anybody.
Well, I...
Just let me finish, because Floyd obviously drugged me and I'm about to fall asleep. I'm telling you, Nikolai Carpathia is evil personified.
Tell me something I don't know.
Oh, I know you people think he's the Antichrist. Well, I know he is. I don't think he has an ounce of truth in him. Everything that comes out of his mouth is a lie. You saw him acting like he was a friend of Matthew's? He wants him dead. He told me that himself. I told you he poisoned Bruce. He sent people to murder me after I was poisoned, just to make sure. The poison had to have killed my baby. Anyway, I hold him responsible. He made me do things I never should have done. And you know what? While I was doing them, I enjoyed it. I loved his power, his appeal, his ability to persuade. When I was making Amanda look like a plant, I actually believed I was doing the right thing, and that was the least of it. I want to die, Rayford. And I don't want to be forgiven or go to heaven to be with God or any of that stuff, but I will fight this poison. I will work with Floyd. I will do whatever I have to do to stay alive long enough to kill that man. I have to get healthy, and I have to somehow get to where he is.
I'll probably die in the process with all the security he's got. I don't care, as long as I get to be the one who does it.
Rayford put a hand on her shoulder. Hattie, you need to relax. Doc Charles did give you more anesthetic before we brought you home, so you may not even remember what you're saying here. Now please, just... Hattie wrenched away from Rayford's hand, and her frail fingers grabbed his shirt. She fiercely pulled him closer and rasped in his face, spittle landing on his cheek.
I'll remember every word, Rayford, and don't think I won't. I will do this thing if it's the last thing I do, and I hope it will be.
All right, Hattie, all right. I won't argue with you about it now.
Don't argue with me about it ever, Rayford. You'll be wasting your time.
Carpathia would soon be on the screen, and Hattie was quickly dozing again. Rayford was glad she would be spared his image and whatever he would say about his debacle in Israel. Something cold ran through Rayford's soul. She had forced him to face himself. Rayford was relieved beyond description to find out that Amanda was all he believed her to be, a loving, trustworthy, loyal wife. But since discovering what Carpathia had done to Bruce, to Amanda, to Hattie, he was again battling with his own desires. He had once prayed for the permission, the honor, of being the one assigned to assassinate Carpathia at the halfway point of the tribulation. Now, truth be told, he found himself angling to be in position at that time. He knew he had to talk sense to Hattie, to keep her from doing something so reckless and stupid. But that was also why he wouldn't confide in Mac or Zion or his daughter and son-in-law, why he wouldn't say a word to his new friend Ken or to Floyd about his own murderous leanings. They would, of course, want to show him the folly of his ways. But he wanted to entertain the thoughts longer. Only when Buck was alone with Chloe in the privacy of one of Chaim Rosenzweig's guest rooms did he realize how worried he had been about her. Trembling, he gathered her in his arms and held her close, careful not to hug her too tight because of her injuries. "When I didn't know where you were," he began, "all I could think of was how I felt after the earthquake."
"But I wasn't lost this time, darling," she said. "You knew where I was."
"You didn't answer your phone. I didn't know if someone had grabbed you or..."
"I turned it off when we were being chased. I didn't want it to give us away."
"That reminds me, I never turned it back on." She started to pull away. "Don't worry about it now," he said. "It doesn't have to be on now, does it?
What if Daddy tries to call? You know he had to be watching."
"He can reach me on my phone."
"Where is it?"
"Ah, I left it in the van. I'll go get it." Now it was her turn to not let him go.
"I'll just turn mine on," she said. "I don't want to be apart from you again right now either."
Their mouths met, and he held her. They sat on the edge of the bed and lay back, her head resting in the crook of his arm. Buck imagined how silly they looked, staring at the ceiling, feet flat on the floor. If she was as tired as he, it wouldn't be long before she nodded off. This probably wasn't the time to bring up a delicate subject, but Buck had never been known for his timing. As had become the custom, Global Community Supreme Commander Leon Fortunato introduced His Excellency, Potentate Nikolai Carpathia, to the international television audience. Rayford was stunned at how straightforward and overt Leon was in telling his own story. Zion had warned Rayford that Nikolai's supernatural abilities would soon be trumpeted and even exaggerated, laying a foundation for when he would declare himself God during the second half of the tribulation. So far, the widespread pronouncements had been circumspect, and Nikolai himself had personally made no such claims. But on this day, Rayford had to wonder how Nikolai would respond to Fortunato's obsequious opening. And he also had to concede that the pair had done a masterful, if not supernatural, job of choreographing the ultimate spin on Nikolai's most public embarrassment.
Chapter 6
"I'm worried about you," Buck said.
"I'll be all right," Chloe said. "I'm glad I came, and I'm doing better than I thought I would. I knew it was a little early for me to take such a trip, but it's worked out."
"That's not what I'm worried about."
She pulled away from him and rolled onto her side to look at him. "What then?"
There was a knock at the door.
"Excuse me," Zion said, "but did you want to watch the Carpathia response on television?"
Chloe started to get up, but Buck stopped her.
"Thanks, Zion. Maybe in a little while. If we miss it, you can recap it for us in the morning."
"Very well. Good night, loved ones."
"Buck Williams," Chloe said. "I don't know when I've felt so special. You've never missed a breaking news story in your life."
"Don't make me out to be too altruistic, hon. I have no magazine to write for anymore, remember?"
"You do, too. You have your own."
"Yeah, but I'm the boss, and I sign the checks. There's no money for any checks, so what am I going to do, fire myself?"
"Anyway, you chose me over the latest news."
Buck rolled toward her and kissed her again. "I know what he's gonna say, anyway. He'll have Fortunato on first to sing his praises, then he'll act all humble and self-conscious and attack Zion for embarrassing him after all he's done for the rabbi."
Chloe nodded. "So what's on your mind?"
"The baby." She raised her brows at him.
"You too?"
He nodded.
"What are you thinking?" "That we weren't too smart," she said. "Our baby will never reach 5, and we'll be raising him, or her, while we're trying to just stay alive."
"Worse than that," he said. "If we were trying just to survive, we might hole up somewhere safe. The baby might be relatively secure for a while. But we've already declared ourselves. We're enemies of the world order, and we're not going to just sit by and protest in our minds."
"I'll have to be careful, of course," she said.
"Yeah," he said, snorting. "Like you've been so far."
She lay there silently. Finally, she said, "Maybe I'll have to be more careful,
"Maybe. I just wonder if we're doing right by the little one."
"It's not like we can change our minds now anyway, Buck, so what's the point?"
"I'm just worried, and there's nobody else I can tell."
"I wouldn't want you telling anyone else."
"So tell me not to worry, or tell me you're worrying with me, or something. Otherwise I'm going to get all parental on you and start treating you like you don't have a brain."
"You've been pretty good about not doing that, Buck, I've noticed."
"Yeah, but sometimes I gotta do more of it. Somebody's gotta look out for you. I like when you keep track of me a little. I don't feel demeaned by it. I need it and appreciate it."
"To a point," she said.
"Granted.
And I'm also quite good at it."
"And subtle," he said, draping his arm over her.
"Buck," she said, "we really should watch Carpathia, don't you think?"
He shrugged, then nodded. "If we're gonna have any chance of thwarting anything he does."
They padded out to where Zion and Chaim sat watching TV.
"No word on Yaakov yet?" Buck asked.
Chaim shook his head.
"And I am none too pleased."
"I merely asked him to go in and get them," Buck said. "Playing decoy and drawing the gunfire was his idea. I wasn't happy about it either."
"The what?" Chaim demanded.
Rayford was strangely buoyed, despite Hattie's threats against Carpathia. In his mind, that showed a level of sanity that, according to Dr. Charles, she hadn't had in weeks. He didn't consider himself a lunatic, despite his own admittedly unrealistic wishes to be God's hitman. What he longed for, down deep, was that Hattie get healthy enough to change her mind about God. She knew the truth. That wasn't the issue. She was the epitome of a person who could know the truth without acting on it.
That was what Bruce Barnes had told Rayford was his own reason for having been left behind. As for Rayford, he had missed the point, despite his first wife's efforts to explain it, that nothing he did for himself could earn God's favor. As for Bruce, he knew all that. He knew salvation was by grace through faith. He simply never made the transaction, thinking he could slide by until later. Later came sooner, and he was left without his family. Ken appeared at the top of the basement stairs.
"Doc and me was wondering if you wanted a watch down here," he said. "He thinks maybe Hattie'll rest better that way."
"Sure," Rayford said, rising quickly. He tried dialing Chloe and Buck one more time without success and left the phone on his chair. As he left the room, Hattie called out to him.
"Would you leave that on, Rayford?"
"Don't you want to sleep?"
"Just leave it on low. It won't bother me."
"My people are calling around looking for Yakov," Chaim whispered as Leon Fortunato's benign smile graced the screen. "If anything happened to him, I don't know."
"I believe no harm can come to him, Chaim. He has become a believer in the Messiah and even has the mark of a sealed tribulation saint on his forehead, visible to other believers."
"You're saying you can see it and I cannot?"
"That's what I'm saying."
"Poppycock, how arrogant."
"Can you see our marks?" Chloe asked.
"Pish-posh, you have no marks," Chaim said.
"We see each other's," Zion said. "I see Buck's and Chloe's plain as day." Chaim waved them off bemusedly as if they were putting him on, and Fortunato was introduced.
"I'd better try to call Daddy before Carpathia comes on," Chloe said.
She hurried to the bedroom and came back with her phone. She showed it to Buck. The readout showed Rayford had called since they were in the bedroom. She dialed his number. Rayford thought he heard his phone ring upstairs, but decided he was mistaken when it didn't ring again. Looking around the basement, he wondered how a big, lanky man like Ken Ritz could live in a tiny, dark, dank spot like this. Ritz was slowly expanding it in his spare time, pointing toward the day when the entire tribulation force might have to live down there. Rayford didn't want to even think about that. Was it Rayford's imagination, or was Fortunato looking more dapper? He hadn't noticed while watching him at the stadium, but that was on a jerry-built setup from his laptop that wasn't as clear as this live satellite transmission directly to Ken's TV. Television usually didn't flatter a stocky, middle-aged man, but Fortunato appeared trimmer, more bright-eyed, healthier, and better dressed than usual.
"Ladies and gentlemen of the global community," he began, looking directly into the camera as if the lens was his audience's eyes, as Carpathia had long modeled. "Even the best of families has its squabbles. Since His Excellency Potentate Carpathia was reluctantly swept to power more than 2 years ago, he has made tremendous strides in making the entire Earth one village. Through global disarmament, vast policy changes in the former United Nations and now the global community, he has made our world a better place to live. After the devastating vanishings, he brought about peace and harmony. The only blips on the screen of progress were the result of things outside his control. War resulted in plagues and death, but His Excellency quickly broke the back of the resistance. Atmospheric disasters have befallen us, from earthquakes to floods and tidal waves and even meteor showers. This was all due, we believe, to energy surpluses from whatever caused the vanishings. There remain pockets of resistance to progress and change, and one of the more significant movements in that direction revealed its true nature earlier this evening, before the eyes of the world. His Excellency has the power and the obvious right to retaliate with extreme measures to this affront to his authority and the dignity of his office.
In the spirit of the new society he has built, however, His Excellency has an alternative response he wishes to share with you this evening. Before he does that, however, I would like to share a personal story. This is not second-hand or hearsay, not a legend or an allegory. This happened to me personally, and I assert the veracity of every detail. I share it because it bears on the very issue the potentate will address, spirituality and the supernatural. Fortunato told the world the story of his resurrection at the command of Carpathia, a story Rayford had heard too many times. Fortunato concluded, "And now, without further ado, your potentate and, to me, may I say, my deity, His Excellency Nikolai Carpathia." Chloe had been talking quietly on the phone during Fortunato's bouquet to Carpathia, while Leon uncharacteristically stumbled while both making way for Carpathia and bowing deeply to him, Chloe hung up. "Hattie lost her baby," she said sadly. "You reached your dad?" Hattie answered. She sounded fairly lucid, all things considered. Chloe suddenly laughed, making Buck jerk to see the TV. Fortunato tried to back out of Carpathia's presence while bowing and tripped over a light cord. Out of camera range, he had apparently tumbled and rolled heavily, distracting even the usually unflappable Carpathia and causing him to temporarily lose contact with the lens. Carpathia quickly recovered and grinned magnanimously and condescendingly. "Fellow citizens," he began, "I am certain that if you did not see what happened earlier this evening at Teddy Kollek Stadium in Jerusalem, you have by now heard about it. Let me briefly tell you my view of what occurred and outline my decision of what to do about it. Let me go back.